This is Audible.
Recorded Books and RB Digital present A Court of Wings and Ruin by Sarah J. Maas. Narrated by Amanda Lee Cobb. Resand. 2 years before the wall. The buzzing flies and screaming survivors had long since replaced the beating war drums. The killing field was now a tangled sprawl of corpses, human and fairy alike, interrupted only by broken wings jutting toward the gray sky or the occasional bulk of a felled horse. With the heat, despite the heavy cloud cover, the smell would soon be unbearable. Flies already crawled along eyes gazing unblinkingly upward. They didn't differentiate between mortal and immortal flesh. I picked my way across the once grassy plain, marking the banners half buried in mud and gore. It took most of my lingering strength to keep my wings from dragging over corpse and armor. My own power had been depleted well before the carnage had stopped. I'd spent the final hours fighting as the mortals beside me had, with sword and fist and brute, unrelenting focus. We'd held the lines against Ravinia's legions. Hour after hour we'd held the lines, as I had been ordered to do by my father, as I knew I must do. To falter here would have been the killing blow to our already sundering resistance. The keep looming at my back was too valuable to be yielded to the loyalists, not just for its location in the heart of the continent, but for the supplies it guarded. For the forges that smoldered day and night on its western side, toiling to stock our forces. The smoke of those forges now blended with the pyres already being kindled behind me as I kept walking, scanning the faces of the dead. I made a note to dispatch any soldiers who could stomach it to claim weapons from either army. We needed them too desperately to bother with honor, especially since the other side did not bother with it at all. So still. The battlefield was so still, compared with the slaughter and chaos that had finally halted hours ago. The Loyalist army had retreated rather than surrender, leaving their dead for the crows. I edged around a fallen bay gelding, the beautiful beast's eyes still wide with terror, flies crusting his bloodied flank. The rider was twisted beneath it, the man's head partially severed. Not from a sword blow, no. Those brutal gashes were claws. They wouldn't yield easily. The kingdoms and territories they wanted their human slaves would not lose this war unless they had no other choice. And even then. We'd learned the hard way, very early on, that they had no regard for the ancient rules and rites of battle. And for the Fae territories that fought beside mortal warriors, we were to be stomped out like vermin. I waved away a fly that buzzed in my ear, my hand caked with blood, both my own and foreign. I'd always thought death would be some sort of peaceful homecoming, a sweet, sad lullaby to usher me into whatever waited afterward. I crunched down with an armored boot on the flagpole of a loyalist standard-bearer, smearing red mud across the tusked boar embroidered on his emerald flag. I now wondered if the lullaby of death was not a lovely song, but the droning of flies. If flies and maggots were all death's handmaidens. The battlefield stretched toward the horizon in every direction, save the keep at my back. 3 days. We had held them off. 3 days we had fought and died here. But we'd held the lines. Again and again, I'd rallied human and fairy, had refused to let the loyalists break through. Even when they hammered our vulnerable right flank with fresh troops on the second day. I'd used my power until it was nothing but smoke in my veins. And then I'd used my Illyrian training until swinging my shield and sword was all I knew, all I could manage against the hordes. A half-shredded Illyrian wing jutted from a cluster of high fake corpses, as if it had taken all six of them to bring the warrior down, as if he'd taken them all out with him. My heartbeat pounded through my battered body, as I hauled away the piled corpses. Reinforcements had arrived at dawn on the third and final day, sent by my father after my plea for aid. I had been too lost in battle rage to note who they were beyond an Illyrian unit, especially when so many had been wielding siphons. But in the hours since they'd saved our asses and turned the tide of the battle, I hadn't spotted either of my brothers amongst the living. Did not know if Cassian or Azrael had even fought on the plain. The latter was unlikely, as my father kept him close for spying, but Cassian... Cassian could have been reassigned. I wouldn't have put it past my father to shift Cassian to a unit most likely to be slaughtered, as this one had been, barely half limping off the battlefield earlier. My aching, bloodied fingers dug into dented armor and clammy, stiff flesh as I heaved away the last of the high fey corpses piled atop the fallen Illyrian soldier. The dark hair, the golden-brown skin, the same as Cassian's. But it was not Cassian's death-gray face that gaped at the sky. My breath whooshed from me, my lungs still raw from roaring, my lips dry and chapped. I needed water, badly. But nearby, another set of Illyrian wings poked up from the piled dead. I stumbled and lurched toward it, letting my mind drift someplace dark and quiet while I righted the twisted neck to peer at the face beneath the simple helm. Not him. I picked my way through the corpses to another Illyrian, then another, and another. Some I knew, some I didn't. Still, the killing field stretched onward under the sky, mile after mile, a kingdom of the rotting dead. And still, I looked. Part 1. Princess of Carrion. Chapter 1. Feyre. The painting was a lie. A bright, pretty lie, bursting with pale pink blooms and fat beams of sunshine. I'd begun it yesterday, an idle study of the rose garden lurking beyond the open windows of the studio. Through the tangle of thorns and satiny leaves, the brighter green of the hills rolled away into the distance. Incessant, unrelenting spring. If I'd painted this glimpse into the court the way my gut had urged me, it would have been flesh-shredding thorns, flowers that choked off the sunlight for any plant smaller than them, and rolling hills stained red. But each brushstroke on the wide canvas was calculated. Each dab and swirl of blending colors meant to portray not just idyllic spring, but a sunny disposition as well. Not too happy, but gladly, finally healing from horrors I carefully divulged. I supposed that in the past weeks, I'd crafted my demeanor as intricately as one of these paintings. I supposed that if I had also chosen to show myself as I truly wished, I would have been adorned with flesh-shredding talons and hands that choked the life out of those now in my company. I would have left the gilded halls stained red. But not yet. Not yet, I told myself with every brushstroke, with every move I'd made these weeks. Swift revenge helped no one, and nothing but my own roiling rage. Even if every time I spoke to them, I heard Elaine sobbing as she was forced into the cauldron. Even if every time I looked at them, I saw Nesta fling that finger at the King of Highburn in a death promise. Even if every time I scented them, my nostrils were again full of the tang of Cassian's blood, as it pooled on the dark stones of that bone castle. The paintbrush snapped between my fingers. I cleaved it in two, the pale handle damaged beyond repair. Cursing under my breath, I glanced to the windows, the doors. This place was too full of watching eyes to risk throwing it in the rubbish bin. I cast my mind around me like a net, trawling for any other near enough to witness, to be spying. I found none. I held my hands before me, one half of the brush in each palm. For a moment, I let myself see past the glamour that concealed the tattoo on my right hand and forearm, the markings of my true heart, my true title, High Lady of the Night Court. Half a thought had the broken paintbrush going up in flames. The fire did not burn me, even as it devoured wood and brush and paint. When it was nothing but smoke and ash, I invited in a wind that swept them from my palms and out the open windows. For good measure, I summoned a breeze from the garden to snake through the room, wiping away any lingering tendril of smoke, filling it with the musty, suffocating smell of roses. Perhaps when my task here was done, I'd burn this manor to the ground, too. Starting with those roses. Two approaching presences tapped against the back of my mind, and I snatched up another brush, dipping it in the closest swirl of paint, and lowered the invisible, dark snares I'd erected around this room to alert me of any visitors. I was working on the way the sunlight illuminated the delicate veins in a rose petal, trying not to think of how I'd once seen it do the same to Illyrian wings, when the doors opened. I made a good show of appearing lost in my work, hunching my shoulders a bit, angling my head, and made an even better show of slowly looking over my shoulder, as if the struggle to part myself from the painting was a true effort. But the battle was the smile I forced to my mouth. To my eyes, the real tell of a smile's genuine nature. I practiced in the mirror, over and over. So my eyes easily crinkled as I gave a subdued yet happy smile to Tamlin. To Lucian.
Sorry to interrupt,
Tamlin said, scanning my face for any sign of the shadows I remembered to occasionally fall prey to, the ones I wielded to keep him at bay when the sun sank beyond those foothills.
But I thought you might want to get ready for the meeting.
I made myself swallow, lower the paintbrush. No more than the nervous, unsure girl I'd been long ago. Is... you talked it over with Ianthe? She's truly coming? I hadn't seen her yet. The High Priestess who had betrayed my sisters to Highburn, betrayed us to Highburn. And even if Rhysand's murky, swift reports through the mating bond had soothed some of my dread and terror, she was responsible for it, what had happened weeks ago. It was Lucian who answered, studying my painting as if it held the proof I knew he was searching for.
Yes, she had her reasons. She's willing to explain them to you.
Perhaps along with her reasons for laying her hands on whatever males she pleased, whether they wished her to or not, for doing it to Rhys and Lucian. I wondered what Lucian truly made of it, and the fact that the collateral in her friendship with Highburn had wound up being his mate, Elaine. We hadn't spoken of Elaine save for once, the day after I'd returned. Despite what Jurian implied regarding how my sisters will be treated by Rhysand, I had told him, despite what the Night Court is like, they won't hurt Elaine or Nesta like that, not yet. Rhysand has more creative ways to harm them. Lucian still seemed to doubt it. But then again, I had also implied in my own gaps of memory that perhaps I had not received the same creativity or courtesy. That they believed it so easily, that they thought Rhysand would ever force someone, I added the insult to the long, long list of things to repay them for. I set down the brush and pulled off the paint-flecked smock, carefully laying it on the stool I'd been perched on for 2 hours now. "I'll go change," I murmured, flicking my loose braid over a shoulder. Tamlin nodded, monitoring my every movement as I neared them.
The painting looks beautiful.
It's nowhere near done, I said, dredging up that girl who had shunned praise and compliments, who had wanted to go unnoticed. It's still a mess. Frankly, it was some of my best work,
even if its soullessness was only apparent to me.
I think we all are,
Tamlin offered with a tentative smile. I reined in the urge to roll my eyes and returned his smile, brushing my hand over his shoulder as I passed. Lucian was waiting outside my new bedroom when I emerged 10 minutes later. It had taken me 2 days to stop going to the old one, to turn right at the top of the stairs and not left, but there was nothing in that old bedroom. I'd looked into it once, the day after I returned. Shattered furniture, shredded bedding, clothes strewn about as if he'd gone looking for me inside the armoire. No one, it seemed, had been allowed in to clean. But it was the vines, the thorns, that had made it unlivable. My old bedroom had been overrun with them. They'd curved and slithered over the walls, entwined themselves among the debris, as if they'd crawled off the trellises beneath my windows, as if 100 years had passed and not months. That bedroom was now a tomb. I gathered the soft pink skirts of my gauzy dress in hand and shut the bedroom door behind me. Lucian remained leaning against the door across from mine. His room. I didn't doubt he'd ensured I now stayed across from him. Didn't doubt that the metal eye he possessed was always turned toward my own chambers, even while he slept.
I'm surprised you're so calm, given your promises in Highburn, Lucian said by way of greeting.
The promise I'd made to kill the human queens, the king of Highburn, Jurian, and Ianthe for what they'd done to my sisters, to my friends.
You yourself said Ianthe had her reasons. Furious as I might be, I can hear her out. I had not told Lucian of what I knew regarding her true nature. It would mean explaining that Rhys had thrown her out of his own home, that Rhys had done it to defend himself and the members of his court, and it would raise too many questions, undermine too many carefully crafted lies that had kept him and his court, my court, safe. Though I wondered if, after Valaris, it was even necessary. Our enemies knew of the city, knew it was a place of good and peace, and had tried to destroy it at the first opportunity. The guilt for the attack on Valaris after Rhys had revealed it to those human queens would haunt my mate for the rest of our immortal lives.
She's going to spin a story that you'll want to hear, Lucian warned.
I shrugged, heading down the carpeted, empty hall. I can decide for myself, though it sounds like you've already chosen not to believe her. He fell into step beside me.
She dragged 2 innocent women into this.
She was working to ensure Highburn's alliance held strong. Lucian halted me with a hand around my elbow. I allowed it because not allowing it, winnowing the way I'd done in the woods those months ago, or using an Illyrian defensive maneuver to knock him on his ass, would ruin my ruse.
You're smarter than that.
I studied the broad, tan hand wrapped around my elbow. Then I met 1 eye of russet and 1 of whirling gold. Lucian breathed.
Where is he keeping her?
I knew who he meant. I shook my head.
I don't know. Rosand has 100 places where they could be, but I doubt he'd use any of them to hide Elaine, knowing that I'm aware of them.
Tell me anyway. List all of them.
He'll die the moment you set foot in his territory.
I survived well enough when I found you.
You couldn't see that he had me in thrall. You let him take me back.
Lie, lie, lie.
But the hurt and guilt I expected weren't there. Lucian slowly released his grip.
I need to find her.
You don't even know, Elaine. The mating bond is just a physical reaction overriding your good sense.
Is that what it did to you and Rhys?
A quiet, dangerous question.
But I made fear enter my eyes, let myself drag up memories of the weaver, the carver, the Midengard worm, so that old terror drenched my scent.
I don't want to talk about that, I said, my voice a rasping wobble.
A clock chimed on the main level.
I sent a silent prayer of thanks to the mother and launched into a quick walk.
We'll be late. Lucian only nodded, but I felt his gaze on my back, fixed right on my spine as I headed downstairs to see Ianthe. And at last decide how I was going to shred her into pieces. The High Priestess looked exactly as I remembered, both in those memories Rhys had shown me and in my own daydreamings of using the talons hidden beneath my nails to carve out her eyes, then her tongue, then open up her throat. My rage had become a living thing inside my chest, an echoing heartbeat that soothed me to sleep and stirred me to waking. I quieted it as I stared at Ianthe across the formal dining table, Tamlin and Lucian flanking me. She still wore the pale hood and silver circlet set with its limpid blue stone. Like a siphon, the jewel in its center reminded me of Azriel's and Cassian's siphons, and I wondered if, like the Illyrian warriors, the jewel somehow helped shape an unwieldy gift of magic into something more refined, deadlier. She had never removed it. But then again, I had never seen Ianthe summon any greater power than igniting a ball of phalite in a room. The High Priestess lowered her teal eyes to the dark wood table, the hood casting shadows on her perfect face.
I wish to begin by saying how truly sorry I am. I acted out of a desire to grant what I believed you perhaps yearned for but did not dare voice, while also keeping our allies in Highburn satisfied with our allegiance.
Pretty poisoned lies. But finding her true motive. I'd been waiting these weeks for this meeting. Had spent these weeks pretending to convalesce. Pretending to heal from the horrors I'd survived at Rhysand's hands.
Why would I ever wish for my sisters to endure that?
My voice came out trembling, cold. Ianthe lifted her head, scanning my unsure, if not a bit aloof, face.
So you could be with them forever. And if Lucian had discovered that Elaine was his mate beforehand, it would have been devastating to realize he'd only have a few decades.
The sound of Elaine's name on her lips sent a snarl rumbling up my throat. But I leashed it. Falling into that mask of pained quiet, the newest in my arsenal. Lucian answered,
If you expect our gratitude, you'll be waiting a while, Ianthe.
Tamlin shot him a warning look, both at the words and the tone. Perhaps Lucian would kill Ianthe before I had the chance, just for the horror she'd put his mate through that day.
No,
Ianthe breathed. Eyes wide, the perfect picture of remorse and guilt.
No, I don't expect gratitude in the least. Or forgiveness. But understanding. This is my home, too.
She lifted a slender hand clad in silver rings and bracelets to encompass the room, the manor.
We have all had to make alliances we didn't believe we'd ever forge. Perhaps unsavory ones, yes, but Highburn's force is too great to stop. It now can only be weathered like any other storm.
A glance toward Tamlin.
We have worked so hard to prepare ourselves for Highburn's inevitable arrival. All these months. I made a grave mistake, and I will always regret any pain I caused, but let us continue this good work together. Let us find a way to ensure our lands and people survive.
At the cost of how many others?
Lucian demanded. Again that warning look from Tamlin, but Lucian ignored him.
What I saw in Highburn,
Lucian said, gripping the arms of his chair hard enough that the carved wood groaned.
any promises he made of peace and immunity?
He halted, as if remembering that Ianthe might very well feed this back to the king. He loosened his grip on the chair, his long fingers flexing before settling on the arms again.
We have to be careful.
We will be,
Tamlin promised.
But we've already agreed to certain conditions, sacrifices. If we break apart now, even with Hybern as our ally, we have to present a solid front, together.
He still trusted her. Still thought that Ianthe had merely made a bad call. Had no idea what lurked beneath the beauty, the clothes, and the pious incantations. But then again, that same blindness kept him from realizing what prowled beneath my skin as well. Ianthe bowed her head again.
I will endeavor to be worthy of my friends.
Lucian seemed to be trying very, very hard not to roll his eyes. But Tamlin said,
We'll all try.
That was his new favorite word. Try. I only swallowed, making sure he heard it, and nodded slowly, keeping my eyes on Ianthe.
Don't ever do anything like that again.
A fool's command, one she'd expected me to make, from the quickness with which she nodded. Lucian leaned back in his seat, refusing to say anything else.
Lucian is right, though, I blurted, the portrait of concern.
What of the people in this court during this conflict? I frowned at Tamlin. They were brutalized by Amarantha. I'm not sure how well they will endure living beside Hybern. They have suffered enough.
Tamlin's jaw tightened. Hybern has promised that our people shall remain untouched and undisturbed.
Our people, I nearly scowled, even as I nodded again in understanding.
It was part of our bargain.
When he'd sold out all of Prithian, sold out everything decent and good in himself to retrieve me,
our people will be safe when Hybern arrives, though I've sent out word that families should relocate to the eastern part of the territory, for the time being.
Good. At least he'd considered those potential casualties. At least he cared that much about his people, understood what sorts of sick games Hybern liked to play, and that he might swear one thing, but mean another. If he was already moving those most at risk during this conflict out of the way,
it made my work here all the easier. And East, a bit of information I tucked away. If East was safe, then the West.
Hybern would indeed be coming from that direction, arriving there. Tamlin blew out a breath.
That brings me to the other reason behind this meeting.
I braced myself, schooling my face into bland curiosity as he declared,
The first delegation from Hybern arrives tomorrow.
Lucian's golden skin paled. Tamlin added,
Jurian will be here by noon.
Chapter 2 I'd barely heard a whisper of Jurian these past weeks. Hadn't seen the resurrected human commander since that night in Hybern. Jurian had been reborn through the cauldron using the hideous remnants of him that Amarantha had hoarded as trophies for 500 years, his soul trapped and aware within his own magically preserved eye. He was mad. Had gone mad long before the king of Hybern had resurrected him to lead the human queens down a path of ignorant submission. Tamlin and Lucian had to know. Had to have seen that gleam in Jurian's eyes. But they also didn't seem to entirely mind that the king of Hybern possessed the cauldron, that it was capable of cleaving this world apart, starting with the wall. The only thing standing between the gathering, lethal Fey armies and the vulnerable human lands below. No, that threat certainly didn't seem to keep Lucian or Tamlin awake at night, or from inviting these monsters into their home.
Tamlin had promised, upon my return, that I was to be included in the planning, in every meeting. And he was true to his word when he explained that Jurian would arrive with two other commanders from Highburn, and I would be present for it. They indeed wished to survey the wall, to test for the perfect spot to rend it once the cauldron had recovered its strength. Turning my sisters into Fae, apparently, had drained it. My smugness at the fact was short-lived. My first task: learn where they planned to strike, and how long the cauldron required to return to its full capacity, and then smuggle that information to Rhysand and the others. I took extra care dressing the next day. After sleeping fitfully, thanks to a dinner with a guilt-ridden Ianthe, who went to excessive lengths to kiss my ass and Lucian's. The priestess apparently wished to wait until the Highburn commanders were settled before making her appearance. She cooed about wanting to ensure that they had the chance to get to know us before she intruded, but one look at Lucian told me that he and I, for once, agreed. She'd likely planned some sort of grand entrance. It made little difference to me, to my plans. Plans that I sent down the mating bond the next morning. Words and images tumbling along a night-filled corridor. I did not dare risk using the bond too often. I'd communicated with Rhysand only once since I'd arrived. Just once, in the hours after I'd walked into my old bedroom and spied the thorns that had conquered it. It had been like shouting across a great distance, like speaking underwater. "I am safe and well," I'd fired down the bond. "I'll tell you what I know soon." I'd waited, letting the words travel into the dark. Then I'd asked, "Are they alive? Hurt?" I didn't remember the bond between us being so hard to hear. Even when I dwelled on this estate, and he'd used it to see if I was still breathing, to make sure my despair hadn't swallowed me whole. But Rhysand's response had come a minute later. "I love you. They are alive. They are healing." That was it. As if it was all that he could manage. I had drifted back to my new chambers, locked the door, and enveloped the entire place in a wall of hard air to keep any scent from my silent tears escaping as I curled up in a corner of the bathing room. I had once sat in such a position, watching the stars during the long, bleak hours of the night. Now I took in the cloudless blue sky beyond the open window, listened to the birds singing to one another, and wanted to roar. I hadn't dared to ask for more details about Cassian and Azrael, or my sisters, in terror of knowing just how bad it had been, and what I'd do if their healing turned grim. What I'd bring down upon these people. Healing. Alive and healing. I reminded myself of that every day. Even when I still heard their screams, smelled their blood. But I did not ask for more. Did not risk touching the bond beyond that first time. I didn't know if someone could monitor such things, the silent messages between mates. Not when the mating bond could be scented. And I was playing such a dangerous game with it. Everyone believed it had been severed. That Rhys's lingering scent was because he'd forced me, had planted that scent in me. They believed that with time, with distance, his scent would fade. Weeks or months, likely. And when it didn't fade, when it remained, that's when I'd have to strike, with or without the information I needed. But out of the possibility that communicating down the bond kept its scent strong, I had to minimize how much I used it. Even if not talking to Rhys, not hearing that amusement and cunning. I would hear those things again, I promised myself over and over. See that wry smile. And I was again thinking of how pained that face had been the last time I'd seen it. Thinking of Rhys, covered in Azrael's and Cassian's blood. As Jurian and the two Highburn commanders winnowed into the gravel of the front drive the next day. Jurian was in the same light leather armor, his brown hair whipping across his face in the blustery spring breeze. He spied us standing on the white marble steps into the house, and his mouth curled in that crooked, smug smile. I willed ice into my veins, the coldness from a court I had never set foot in. But I wielded its master's gift on myself, turning burning rage into frozen calm as Jurian swaggered toward us, a hand on the hilt of his sword. But it was the two commanders, one male, one female, that had a sliver of true fear sliding into my heart. High fey in appearance, their skin the same ruddy hue and hair the identical inky black as their king. But it was their vacant, unfeeling faces that snagged the eye. A lack of emotion, honed from millennia of cruelty. Tamlin and Lucian had gone rigid by the time Jurian halted at the foot of the sleeping front stairs. The human commander smirked.
"You're looking better than the last time I saw you."
I dragged my eyes to his and said nothing. Jurian snorted and gestured the two commanders forward.
"May I present their highnesses, Prince Dagdon and Princess Branna, nephew and niece to the King of Highburn."
Twins. Perhaps linked in power and mental bonds as well. Tamlin seemed to remember that these were now his allies and marched down the stairs. Lucian followed.
"He'd sold us out. Sold out Prithian. For me, to get me back."
Smoke curled in my mouth. I willed frost to fill it again. Tamlin inclined his head to the prince and princess.
"Welcome to my home. We have rooms prepared for all of you."
"My brother and I shall reside in one together," the princess said.
Her voice was deceptively light, almost girlish. The utter lack of feeling, the utter authority, was anything but. I could practically feel the snide remark simmering in Lucian. But I stepped down the stairs and said, ever the lady of the house, that these people, that Tamlin, had once expected me to gladly embrace.
"We can easily make adjustments."
Lucian's metal eye whirred and narrowed on me, but I kept my face impassive as I curtsied to them. To my enemy. Which of my friends would face them on the battlefield? Would Cassian and Azrael have even healed enough to fight, let alone lift a sword? I did not allow myself to dwell on it, on how Cassian had screamed as his wings had been shredded. Princess Branna surveyed me. The rose-colored dress, the hair that Alice had curled and braided over the top of my head in a coronet, the pale pink pearls at my ears. A harmless, lovely package, perfect for a high lord to mount whenever he wished. Branna's lip curled as she glanced at her brother. The prince deemed the same thing, judging by his answering sneer. Tamlin snarled softly in warning.
"If you're done staring at her, perhaps we can move on to the business between us."
Jurian let out a low chuckle and strode up the stairs without being given leave to do so.
"They're curious."
Lucian stiffened at the impudence of the gesture, the words.
"It's not every century that the contested possession of a female launches a war, especially a female with such talents."
I only turned on a heel and stalked up the steps after him.
"Perhaps if you'd bothered going to war over Miriam, she wouldn't have left you for Prince Draken."
A ripple seemed to go through Jurian. Tamlin and Lucian tensed at my back, torn between monitoring our exchange and escorting the two Highburn royals into the house. Upon my own explanation that Azrael and his network of spies were well trained, we'd cleared any unnecessary servants, wary of spying ears and eyes. Only the most trusted among them remained. Of course, I'd forgotten to mention that I knew Azrael had pulled his spies weeks ago,
the information not worth the cost of their lives, or that it served my own purposes to have fewer people watching me. Jurian halted at the top of the stairs, his face a mask of cruel death as I took the last steps to him.
Careful what you say, girl.
I smiled, breezing past.
Or what? You'll throw me in the cauldron.
I strode between the front doors, edging around the table in the heart of the entry hall, its towering vase of flowers arching to meet the crystal chandelier. Right there, just a few feet away, I had crumpled into a ball of terror and despair all those months ago. Right there, in the center of the foyer, Moore had picked me up and carried me out of this house and into freedom. "Here's the first rule of this visit," I said to Jurian over my shoulder as I headed for the dining room where lunch awaited. "Don't threaten me in my own home." The posturing, I knew a moment later, had worked. Not on Jurian, who glowered as he claimed a seat at the table, but on Tamlin, who brushed a knuckle over my cheek as he passed by, unaware of how carefully I had chosen the words, how I had baited Jurian to serve up the opportunity on a platter. That was my first step. Make Tamlin believe, truly believe, that I loved him and this place, and everyone in it, so that he wouldn't suspect when I turned them on each other. Prince Dagdon yielded to his twins every wish and order, as if he were the blade she wielded to slice through the world. He poured her drinks, sniffing them first. He selected the finest cuts of meat from the platters and neatly arranged them on her plate. He always let her answer, and never so much as looked at her with doubt in his eyes. One soul in two bodies. And from the way they glanced to each other in wordless exchanges, I wondered if they were perhaps like me. Damati. My mental shields had been a wall of black adamant since arriving, but as we dined, beats of silence going on longer than conversation, I found myself checking them over and over.
"We will set out for the wall tomorrow," Branna was saying to Tamlin, more of an order than a request. "Jurian will accompany us. We require the use of sentries who know where the holes in it are located."
The thought of them so close to the human lands. But my sisters were not there. No, my sisters were somewhere in the vast territory of my own court, protected by my friends. Even if my father would return home from his business dealings on the continent in a matter of a month or two, I still hadn't figured out how I'd tell him.
"Lucian and I can escort you," I offered.
Tamlin whipped his head to me. I waited for the refusal, the shutdown. But it seemed the High Lord had indeed learned his lesson, was indeed willing to try, as he merely gestured to Lucian. "My emissary knows the wall as well as any sentry." "You are letting them do this. You are rationally allowing them to bring down that wall and prey upon the humans on the other side." The words tangled and hissed in my mouth. But I made myself give Tamlin a slow, if not slightly displeased, nod. He knew I'd never be happy about it. The girl he believed had been returned to him would always seek to protect her mortal homeland. Yet he thought I'd stomach it for him. For us. That Highburn wouldn't feast on the humans once that wall came down. That we'd merely absorb them into our territory. "We'll leave after breakfast," I told the princess. And I added to Tamlin, "with a few sentries as well." His shoulders loosened at that. I wondered if he'd heard how I'd defended Valaris, that I'd protected the Rainbow against a legion of beasts like the Adder, that I'd slaughtered the Adder brutally, cruelly, for what it had done to me and mine. Jurian surveyed Lucian with a warrior's frankness.
"I always wondered who made that eye after she carved it out."
We did not speak of Amarantha here. We had never allowed her presence into this house. And it had stifled me for those months I'd lived here after Under the Mountain, killed me day by day to shove those fears and pain down deep. For a heartbeat, I weighed who I had been with who I was now supposed to be. Slowly healing, emerging back into the girl Tamlin had fed and sheltered and loved before Amarantha had snapped my neck after 3 months of torture. So I shifted in my seat, studied the table. Lucian merely leveled a hard look at Jurian as the two Highburn royals watched with impassive faces. I have an old friend at the Dawn Court. She's skilled at tinkering, lending magic and machinery. Tamlin got her to craft it for me at great risk. A hateful smile from Jurian. Does your little mate have a rival? My mate is none of your concern. Jurian shrugged. She shouldn't be any of yours either, considering she's probably been fucked by half the Illyrian army by now. I was fairly certain that only centuries of training kept Lucian from leaping over the table to rip out Jurian's throat. But it was Tamlin's snarl that rattled the glasses. You will behave as a proper guest, Jurian, or you will sleep in the stables like the other beasts. Jurian merely sipped from his wine. Why should I be punished for stating the truth? Neither of you were in the war when my forces allied with the Illyrian brutes. A sidelong glance at the two Highburn royals. I suppose you two had the delight of fighting against them. We kept the wings of their generals and lords as trophies, Dagdon said with a small smile. It took every bit of concentration not to glance at Tamlin, not to demand the whereabouts of the two sets of wings his father had kept as trophies after he'd butchered Rhysand's mother and sister. Pinned in the study, Rhys had said. But I hadn't spotted any trace when I'd gone hunting for them upon returning here, feigning exploration out of sheer boredom on a rainy day. The cellars had yielded nothing either. No trunks or crates or locked rooms containing those wings. The two bites of roasted lamb I'd forced down now rebelled against me. But at least any hint of disgust was a fair reaction to what the Highburn prince had claimed. Jurian indeed smiled at me as he sliced his lamb into little pieces. You know that we fought together, don't you? Me and your High Lord. Held the lines against the Loyalists. Battled side by side until Gore was up to our shins. He is not her High Lord, Tamlin said with unnerving softness. Jurian only purred at me. He must have told you where he hid Miriam and Draken. They're dead, I said flatly. The cauldron says otherwise. Cold fear settled into my gut. He'd tried it already, to resurrect Miriam for himself, and had found that she was not amongst the deceased. I was told they were dead, I said again, trying to sound bored, impatient. I took a bite of my lamb, so bland compared to my wealth of spices in Valaris. I'd think you'd have better things to do, Jurian, than obsess over the lover who jilted you. His eyes gleamed, bright with 5 centuries of madness, as he skewered a morsel of meat with his fork. They say you were fucking Rhysand before you ever jilted your own lover. That is enough, Tamlin growled. But I felt it then. The tap against my mind saw their plan, clear and simple. Rile us, distract us, while the two quiet royals slid into our minds. Mine was shielded, but Lucian's, Tamlin's. I reached out with my night-kissed power, casting it like a net, and found 2 oily tendrils spearing for Lucian's and Tamlin's minds, as if they were indeed javelins thrown across the table. I struck. Dagdon and Branna jolted back in their seats,
as if I'd landed a physical blow, while their powers slammed into a barrier of black adamant around Lucian's and Tamlin's minds. They shot their dark eyes toward me. I held each of their gazes.
"What's wrong?"
Tamlin asked, and I realized how quiet it had become. I made a good show of furrowing my brow in confusion. "Nothing." I offered a sweet smile to the two royals. "Their highnesses must be tired after a long journey." And for good measure, I lunged for their own minds, finding a wall of white bone. They flinched as I dragged black talons down their mental shields, gouging deep. The warning blow cost me, a low, pulsing headache forming around my temples, but I merely dug back into my food, ignoring Jurian's wink. No one spoke for the rest of the meal. Chapter 3 The spring woods fell silent as we rode between the budding trees, birds and small furred beasts having darted for cover long before we passed. Not for me or Lucian, or the three sentries trailing a respectful distance behind, but from Jurian and the two Highburn commanders who rode in the center of our party,
as if they were as awful as the bogey, as the Naga.
We reached the wall without incident, or Jurian trying to bait us into distraction. I'd been awake most of the night, casting my awareness through the manor,
hunting for any sign that Dagdan and Branna were working their Daemati influence on anyone else.
Mercifully, the curse-breaking ability I'd inherited from Helion's Spellcleaver, High Lord of the Day Court, had detected no tangles, no spells, save for the wards around the house itself, preventing anyone from winnowing in or out. Tamlin had been tense at breakfast, but hadn't asked me to remain behind. I'd even gone so far as to test him by asking what was wrong, to which he'd only replied that he had a headache. Lucian had just patted him on the shoulder and promised to look after me. I'd nearly laughed at the words. But laughter was now far from my lips as the wall pulsed and throbbed, a heavy, hideous presence that loomed from half a mile away. Up close, though, even our horses were skittish, tossing their heads and stomping their hooves on the mossy earth as we tied them to the low-hanging branches of blooming dogwoods. "The gap in the wall is right up here," Lucian was saying, sounding about as thrilled as me to be in such company. Stomping over the fallen pink blossoms, Dagdan and Branna slid into step beside him, Jurian slithering off to survey the terrain, the sentries remaining with our mounts. I followed Lucian and the royals, keeping a casual distance behind.
I knew my elegant, fine clothes weren't fooling the prince and princess into forgetting that a fellow Daemati now walked at their backs.
But I'd still carefully selected the embroidered sapphire jacket and brown pants, adorned only with the jeweled knife and belt that Lucian had once gifted me. A lifetime ago.
"Who cleaved the wall here?"
Branna asked, surveying the hole that we could not see. No, the wall itself was utterly invisible, but rather felt, as if the air had been sucked from one spot.
"We don't know,"
Lucian replied, the dappled sunlight glinting along the gold thread adorning his fawn-brown jacket as he crossed his arms.
"Some of the holes just appeared over the centuries. This one is barely wide enough for one person to get through."
An exchanged glance between the twins. I came up behind them, studying the gap, the wall around it that made every instinct recoil at its wrongness.
"This is where I came through, that first time."
Lucian nodded, and the other two lifted their brows. But I took a step closer to Lucian, my arm nearly brushing his, letting him be a barrier between us. They'd been more careful at breakfast this morning about pushing against my mental shields, yet now, letting them think I was physically cowed by them. Branna studied how closely I stood to Lucian, how he shifted slightly to shield me, too. A little cold smile curled her lips.
How many holes are in the wall?
We've counted three along our entire border, Lucian said tightly. Plus one off the coast, about a mile away.
I didn't let my cool mask falter as he offered up the information. But Branna shook her head, dark hair devouring the sunlight.
The sea entrances are of no use. We need to break in on land.
The continent surely has spots, too.
Their queens have an even weaker grasp on their people than you do, Dagdon said. I plucked up that gem of information, studied it. We'll leave you to explore it then, I said, waving toward the hole. When you're done, we'll ride to the next.
It's 2 days from here,
Lucian countered. Then we'll plan a trip for that excursion, I said simply. Before Lucian could object, I asked, And the third hole?
Lucian tapped a foot against the mossy ground, but said, 2 days past that.
I turned to the royals, arching a brow. Can both of you winnow? Branna flushed, straightening. But it was Dagdon who admitted,
I can.
He must have carried both Branna and Jurian when they arrived. He added,
Only a few miles if I bear others.
I merely nodded and headed toward a tangle of stooping dogwoods, Lucian following close behind. When there was nothing but ruffling pink blossoms and trickling sunlight through the thatch of branches, when the royals had busied themselves with the wall, out of sight and sound, I took up a perch on a smooth, bald rock. Lucian sat against a nearby tree, folding one booted ankle over another.
Whatever you're planning, it'll land us knee-deep in shit.
I'm not planning anything. I plucked up a fallen pink blossom and twirled it between my thumb and forefinger. That golden eye narrowed, clicking softly. What do you even see with that thing? He didn't answer. I chucked the blossom onto the soft moss between us. Don't trust me? After all we've been through? He frowned at the discarded blossom, but still said nothing. I busied myself by sorting through my pack until I found the canteen of water. If you'd been alive for the war, I asked him, taking a swig, would you have fought on their side, or fought for the humans?
I would have been part of the Human Fey Alliance.
Even if your father wasn't?
Especially if my father wasn't.
But Baron had been a part of that alliance, if I correctly recalled my lessons with Rhys all those months ago. And yet here you are, ready to march with Highburn.
I did it for you too, you know.
Cold, hard words.
I went with him to get you back.
I never realized what a powerful motivator guilt can be.
That day you went away,
he said, struggling to avoid that other word, left.
I beat Tamlin back to the manor, received the message when we were out on the border and raced here. But the only trace of you was that ring, melted between the stones of the parlor. I got rid of it a moment before Tam arrived home to see it.
A probing, careful statement of the facts that pointed not toward abduction. They melted it off my finger, I lied. His throat bobbed, but he just shook his head, the sunlight leaking through the forest canopy, setting the ember red of his hair flickering. We sat in silence for minutes. From the rustling and murmuring, the royals were finishing up, and I braced myself, calculating the words I'd need to wield without seeming suspicious. I said quietly, Thank you for coming to Highburn to get me. He pulled at the moss beside him, jaw tight.
It was a trap. What I thought we were to do there, it did not turn out that way.
It was an effort not to bare my teeth, but I walked to him, taking up a place at his side against the wide trunk of the tree. This situation is terrible, I said.
And it was the truth.
A low snort.
I knocked my knee against his. Don't let Jurian bait you. He's doing it to feel out any weakness between us.
I know.
I turned my face to him, resting my knee against his in silent demand.
Why?